welcome to the Android Central podcast. It is episode number 300 for Thursday, August 4th, 2016. I am not Phil Mickinson, and I never will be.
You don't say.
But we're gonna do this anyway. Phil's no longer here, but we're gonna podcast. It's a big milestone for us. It's important. It's a new show, but the same old show in a lot of ways. I'm Alex Dobie. I'm kind of hosting and introducing this, and also speaking words on this podcast, which is recorded not live at all in front of anyone, but just in front of the four of us in audio. So there's that. We got Jerry Hildenbrand,
and I'm just dope as shit. I'm not hosting anything.
It's not like you interrupted my intro two times, so I had to repeat it three times before we did this.
It was
at
good.
Least that didn't happen.
It was good for
some
you.
People. Yeah, okay. Breaking me in easy. Andrew Martinick.
Yes, I'm also here. I'm not dope as shit like Jerry, but that's okay.
It's relative.
Sure.
And yeah, in Canada.
Why did you have to qualify that?
In Canada? Well, you're in Canada.
That's true, but you didn't say from the U.S., Andrew Martinick. You
just
assumed.
But, we're already getting into prejudices here.
I think we can assume that being in Canada is dope as shit, even if I'm not dope as shit.
Sure.
Some places, yeah, I like it up there. For reasons.
A lot of things have been dope as shit this week. We have had a whole lot of Samsung Galaxy Note. Let's just kick off with that. Andrew, you saw it last week, a little while, with Mark. You've had a bunch of time to kind of think and mull over this, and it's been an interesting one, hasn't it? Because it's been a continuation of what we saw from them last year, with it being kind of this phablet-sized device that was very much a continuation of the Galaxy S devices that came before it. But at the same time, they're bringing some new stuff in there, and there's a lot of some old and some new, and it's... Where do we stand on this? What's the short version of explain to me like I'm five, the Galaxy Note 8.
Yeah.
So.
Well, here's the thing. So I've been, of course, I like you said, I've used it way earlier. So I've had a lot more time to ruminate on this and write all these posts and a hands-on preview and all that. So I always like when everybody else gets to see it, and then I get to see if my initial impressions were like validated or not. And if my impressions aren't validated, I just say that they're wrong. You know, the other people are wrong anyway because I saw it first.
But I've always kind of, like, most of the time, first impressions of a phone just mean nothing to me. And the phones that have just kind of been meh initially have been the ones that I really like. But maybe I'm just indecisive. Like
well,
that.
So I think you kicked it off right. So this is really a continuation of the Galaxy S7 and S7 Edge. And the way I described it was, this is just a three-pronged attack. And the Note 7 happened to just launch 6 months later. Theoretically, all the components that are here and things that are here could have come together with the GS7 and GS7 Edge. But really, it's just they're all basically the same phone on the inside. And then you just have three different sizes. And the one on the highest end has a little more storage, some new software features, and the S Pen, of course, and the iris scanner. So there's just a few extra things on the side there, but really, baseline experience-wise, the Note 7 isn't some brand new thing that, you know, is blowing everybody away, because we've seen, what would you say, like 85% of this phone already with the GS7
Edge?
Yeah,
for the most part, yeah, and the new stuff that is there in the software, undoubtedly we'll see on the old phones as well. It isn't, I mean, we saw this last year with the Note 5, but it isn't a case like it was 2 years ago with the Note 4, where there was, you know, the build was totally different, the camera was just way, way better, and the CPU was a step beyond what we'd had before as well. So,
yeah.
There are good reasons for Samsung to do that in terms of just the logistics of building a phone. It makes it easier if they all run more or less the same chip and the same RAM and everything else, and, you know, you can just order a bunch of the same camera modules, and it just makes it easier when you're building a thing. But at the same time, it does, to like hardcore Note fans, maybe make it seem not boring. I wouldn't go as far as to call it boring, but just it isn't as special as a device as it used to be for enthusiasts, I think.
But then, right. are they not really Note fans as much as just spec fans who just want the latest and greatest?
I think a little bit that they started off as spec fans, where the Note series really did push the envelope of not just the highest specs, but just all the specs. You know, it was the biggest battery, the highest resolution screen, the biggest screen, the best one with the stylus, super high-end processors. It had all that stuff, but everything else... I mean, here's the thing. You can't just keep battling on specs anymore because the specs are really easy to put in a lot of phones.
And the specs are increasingly kind of meaningless. I mean, you can argue like 4 gigs of RAM versus 6 or whatever and what difference that makes. And
stop.
But no, yeah.
He's just saying you can argue it. He doesn't say you're right.
It makes no difference once you get past 2.
So we're talking about... that's what it comes down to is of course, it's the same kind of... I would just keep saying the same platform, same internals, whatever you want to say. Sure, there are little things that Samsung could have added here. 6 gigs of RAM, a Snapdragon 821, or, you know, offered
you,
like...
Now
a
you two, stop.
Or could have offered a 256 gig internal storage option or something stupid like that. But they didn't... There's none of this would actually affect the experience, and it would just make the phone even more expensive, which it's a pretty absurdly expensive phone
yeah,
already.
Yeah, you talk about the 821. Do we know if that's even ready yet? What's even shipping that has that in it?
Sure,
some Asus phone is.
I don't know that that's actually shipping.
But
yet,
okay, if we want to go there, only the best phones will have the 821. Guess what, guys? The 823 is coming shortly. Then your best phones now suck. But they're Snapdragon 820s with tiny internal revisions that you're not going to see any difference from.
Exactly. Yeah, and mean, Samsung knows Sorry, go ahead.
These aren't the big changes that we were seeing in 2013, 2014 between generations. I mean, we're not approaching kind of Intel level tick-tock-tock cycles yet, but I mean, we're sort of getting close. Where, you know, the 820 is a significant improvement in efficiency over the 810, but in terms of overall power, it's not.
It's an improvement because the 810 was kind of a mess and it was just this weird blip. But I agree. It is going to be, I think, what is there left to do next year? Is it going to be that big of a difference of your standard smartphone that's a QHD screen and likes to load apps fast and play games and stuff? Is it probably not? It's just the way the industry is right now.
The big important point there is that, yes, this isn't just Samsung taking its foot off the gas and not putting, you know, the highest end specs in here. It's just an industry change as a whole that the specs are not the most interesting thing anymore. Like Daniel said, you know, 3 to 4 years ago where there were huge jumps in specs and features. I mean, I was looking at the differences between the Note 4 and the Note 7 in 2 years, and you know, you still have a solid camera on both phones. You have 3 gigs of RAM on the Note 4 that's 2 years old. That's plenty. You have a quad HD display even 2 years ago. You know, sure, there have been little tweaks. Of course, the screen is a little better now, and we can talk about the curves on the sides. Of course, the software is improved a little bit, but that's not a monumental change in the last 2 years, simply because there's nothing really else for them to add at this point. And that's not to say in the next 2 years there couldn't be something else huge.
But that's true. I mean, we'll get to that in a little bit. I mean, I want to just say before we do that, Samsung doesn't really care about the 100,000 or so enthusiasts who want all the highest specs and all the greatest internals, because they'll complain on the internet for a week and they'll still buy the damn thing. They're selling to the tens of millions of people who the difference between the Note 4 and the Note 7 that they appreciate is on the outside, where you have the beautiful design and the new build quality and the waterproofing. And yes, as Jerry was saying, there's an iris scanner on this thing, which is another new thing.
Well, and it's new. We can't discount that. People are predictable. If it's new, they'll want it.
It has this sci-fi. I mean, is you can argue about it how useful it is compared to the fingerprint scanner, and the fingerprint scanner, you know, you're holding the phone in your hand. It's never going to be faster to tilt it up and point it at your eyes than it is to just press the button that your thumb's already on. But it has this sci-fi quality, and it is something that they can demo to you in a store, or that might just kind of push you towards buying that as opposed to something else.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how many people are getting won over by the iris scanner, but.
It's more like, well, we made it. Let's put it in a phone.
Yeah, I'm just surprised. My best thing to say about it is that it probably didn't increase the cost of the phone very much, and you should be happy about that.
Well, I'm surprised it took so long because they've been watching your eyeballs since, what, the Note 2?
Yeah, they've been doing the
Smart Stay.
I was going to say Smart Screen, but Smart Stay, yeah. So, and a lot of phones have started doing that as well. And this isn't the first phone with an iris scanner either.
No.
I remember I was asking about, you know, wow, there's probably only been a couple with iris scanners, right? And all of a sudden I had a list of 10 phones right off the start that have had iris scanners that, you know, use very much the same technology.
Is it the same technology though? Samsung's using the front sort of eye blaster camera thing.
Yeah, so Jerry, Eye Verify is, I think, I mean, that's what the Alcatel Idol 3 used, right?
That's what the modern few Android phones that are using iris scanning, they're using that company's stuff.
And people were quick to remind me that the Lumia 950 also had it.
Oh, cool.
It's still a thing.
All three people who bought that phone.
So that's six eyes, man.
But here's the thing, right? So, I mean, Alcatel is not going to make an iris scanner into a platform.
No.
As much as Microsoft wants Windows Hello to be a platform, it's ineffectual on Windows Phone because nobody has them. So Samsung's in a position and is the only one in a position in the Android ecosystem to make iris scanners into a platform with a public API that people will actually use.
So here's the interesting part about that is they're handling this the right way. They're handling it exactly the same way that they handled their swipe fingerprint scanners on the GS5 and Note 4 before Marshmallow came out with built-in APIs for this. So they're expanding that public API you talked about. It's called Samsung Pass. And it's the same thing that they used for the fingerprint scanners. And it just lets any app that wants to use the iris scanner for authentication plug this in and give you the option to use your stored irises that are already on the phone. And they talked about having partnerships with banks where they said that they were something like exploring the possibility of using the iris scanner with Samsung Pass, which was very non-committal. But it was enough to put big bank names up on a slide during the presentation.
You couldn't actually use Samsung Pay with it right now, though.
No.
If you secure your bank account with an iris scanner on your phone, you deserve what's going to happen to you.
So, I mean, basically, it's the same thing, Jerry, as before Marshmallow came out with its fingerprint sensor APIs, Bank of America updated their app to just support Samsung's fingerprint scanners. And that was a way for people to have a longer password that was double authenticated with a fingerprint swipe.
But a fingerprint scanner isn't the most secure thing, but it's still a billion times more secure than a piece of software that looks at an image. An image can be faked.
Well, it's not an image, right? It's a live. It's a video stream.
But I can put a picture of Dan in front of one, and more than likely get it to register.
Yeah, so these are the things that I want to be able to test once I get it, because using
a fingerprint is more volumetric and it has texture and different surfaces touch in different sensitivities. It's just a whole lot better than a two-dimensional image.
Yeah, and if Russell was here, he would yell this at you guys saying that it's about convenience and not security.
Right,
the same
true.
Goes for this, which I mean, I guess. Maybe it's a little ironic because it's not the most convenient thing either. It's not normal. It's certainly not as convenient as just pressing a button. But anyway, it is more convenient than entering a password.
If I have Dan's phone, I probably don't have a full 8x10 glossy of his face. So
I don't know about that, Jerry. Yeah.
And people, I mean, they did talk about the possibilities of potentially using multiple factors so you could have a password and then a fingerprint and then an iris scan or something like that. I mean, apps could take this in any way that they want. It doesn't have to just be the one way you get into an app, but it is something where, like Daniel said, this is the only way that this is going to work. I mean, you could pencil it in right now that the Galaxy S8 is also going to add an iris scanner, and then they can have an even wider base of people that, you know, to go to developers and say, hey, add this into your app.
Well, I mean, this is just their because everybody has a Windows computer, and it's going to be able to unlock your damn computer eventually. Let's think for the future.
I think it's Samsung trying to add an actual amount of value to a feature that has until now been largely useless. I mean, this is the fourth generation idea of an iris scanner. You know, we saw like early on with the Atrix when it had a fingerprint scanner, it was terrible. It was a piece of crap, and it didn't enable anything but for you to unlock your phone. Today, that's a completely different story. I think Samsung is trying to hedge against, you know, what will be a very important addition to future phones in its ecosystem. I don't think this is just a, hey, let's throw this in here and see what happens. They must have a plan for this.
I do think that they're going to go with it for a longer period, just like they started out. Like you said, they started out with crappy fingerprint scanners, and all of a sudden their fingerprint, one-touch fingerprint sensors get better and better. And, you know, that worked out pretty well because Android ended up having built-in fingerprint sensor APIs. Now, I don't know if they would eventually do that with iris scanners or anything like that, but Samsung can put its weight behind it. And my only issue with it is what Alex was talking about, where at this point, and probably in the next generation, it's nowhere near as convenient as putting your finger on a home button that you already use to turn on the screen most of the time to enable the iris scanner to start looking at you to unlock in the first place.
But yeah, the trade-offs cool. involved... It is cool, but the trade-offs involved with fingerprint scanners are only going to get smaller. We have LG now making fingerprint scanners that go under the screen that you can't see. They're getting faster and faster. Huawei's now are really good. OnePlus is really good.
People are still working on refining the actual digitizer to take your thumb or fingerprint anywhere on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's still being developed.
Here's another thing that I thought about. What about using the iris scanner as a method of continuous authentication rather than just one-time authentication?
Enjoy your 2 hours of battery life.
Right. I'm not saying right now, but I mean, this is using an infrared sensor as well as an actual camera sensor. So if you can use the camera sensor to initially unlock the phone and the infrared sensor to maintain authentication...
Check and see if you're staring at the phone every 30 seconds, just like the smart stay or whatever. But in this case, what it does is just instantly turns the screen off and locks the phone if you don't look at it.
Yeah, well, I think what you do something like you use the camera, like we said, to authenticate, and then you use the IR sensor to watch. And if there's a certain amount of time where there's no iris activity to see, it turns the camera back on to double check, and then it decides what it wants to do if it sees nothing. I mean, that right. could be easily done without killing the battery.
So, I mean, there are uses for this that we can see, but for the moment, it is in this one phone, in this one mass market phone, that is. And this one mass market phone is about way more than just this one feature. So, we were talking a little bit about build quality before and how it's effectively this. If you go from the Galaxy S6, the Galaxy S6 was very much going back to that old school sort of, there were very clear joins between the metal and the glass, and it was all very flat and all very angular. And now you have it kind of morphing into this very, very symmetrical, very, very organic metal and glass thing where the metal, especially in the black version, almost blends into the glass. It's a very, very futuristic phone, I think. That's my big takeaway from spending some time with it.
I think the big point is just how smooth it is on all sides. There's no place where, you know, you run your hands over it and it, you know, your fingers like catch on anything. I mean, the only things that really stick out are the home button and the camera bump on the back. You know, if you turn it around in your hands on the corners and the sides, it's all symmetrical and it's all really smooth. And I initially was worried about that after, you know, using the Note 5 quite a bit, which has, you know, a considerable amount of metal on the sides that you can kind of grip onto. But with this design, it also makes it narrower, and it just feels like it's a little easier to hold. I mean, I have to use it for a longer period, but my initial worries about it after using it for a little while longer, you know, my worries went away. How do you guys feel about that?
We all speak at once, one at a time.
Everybody's excited. Go ahead, Alex.
We are. Jerry.
What?
Jerry.
I just want to get in every. I want to get in every comment thread on every internet blog post and demand a flat Note 7. That's all I think.
People have already beaten you to that, Jerry. So there was I guess prototype. It was one of the Korean models. It had that model number. It had the Korean software on it. That was basically a testing device that Samsung made, which was the back of a regular Note 7 and just a flat front. And the reason apparently they make them that way is because they don't want to waste the expensive edge screens on something that's just going to be a testing device that's used for, you know, whatever carriers do when they test phones. That's what they want you to believe when they but supposedly that's what it's for. People see this, they think, oh, there was originally this flat Note 7 that people who don't want an edge screen are going to be able to buy. Eventually these things may well find their way onto eBay or something, but I mean it's not happening, and there's a good reason it's not happening. But yeah, there's a good reason it's not happening, and it's because the regular Note 7 is actually mostly flat.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing. I get that people's expectations were set. I mean, the last three iterations of Samsung launches had a curved and a flat version. Well, four if you consider the Note Edge, Note 4 combination.
I always consider the Note Edge.
Yeah, the original edge screen with a ruler that everybody loved. So Samsung has conditioned people in the last four releases over 2 years that there's a curved and a flat one. But I think that people are overreacting. And I love that Jerry brought this up. Because people are making crazy assumptions. They see that, okay, it has a curved screen. So, oh my God, it must be horrible because it must be exactly the same as previous edge screens that I've interacted with.
Wait. Did you just call me and all my flat Note 7 comrades crazy?
Yes, Jerry.
Okay. The flat noses. It's like the flat earthers.
Oh, yes, the flat noses.
It's crazy like a fox in a good way.
So what people don't realize is the curve is... Would you guys say half the size of what the GS7 is?
It's smaller than that? It's half the size, but it's also, I mean...
A tighter radius. Tighter
is the adjective to use. And it feels completely different than the S7 Edge.
It doesn't feel like it gets in the way like the S7 Edge. I mean, I know that Jerry and I both dealt with, you know, accidental touches from our palms on the GS7 Edge. And even on the GS6 Edge, but... This is not going to be as big an issue as people think. And I get the fact that they can say, okay, this is a bit of a waste because you have these curves and I don't care about the Edge UX software because nobody does because it's not that useful, or it's going to interfere with the S Pen or whatever. But the big thing is here, it has a great visual effect because it almost... gets rid of the side bezels, and you know, when you look at it front on, especially on the black model, it also makes the phone a couple millimeters narrower than the Note 5 and Note 4. I think
it makes a big difference.
It's like multiple. I want to say it's like 4 or 5 millimeters narrower than the Note 4. Something stupid like that, screen size.
The other thing, this phone is just smaller than everything. It's weird. I mean, compared to the S6 Edge Plus I've been using recently, it's ridiculous compared to the iPhone 6S Plus. We have side-by-side pictures in an article going up tomorrow, I think. It just makes the iPhone... I mean, fair enough, the comparison to last year's Samsung phone, you expect similarities and, you know, for it to move on in design terms. The comparison with the iPhone is ridiculous. The iPhone looks so, like, bulbous and bulky and bezel-y next to this thing. And that's probably the greatest victory for Samsung, the design side. Because used to be that the iPhone was the one best looking, best feeling, the most premium smartphone you could buy, the most premium feeling. And for a long time, Samsung was playing catch up. Samsung was the copycat. And now we have a situation where, in a year where it's going to be a bit of a weird year for Apple, as far as we can tell, with these new phones coming out with the big camera bumps on the back, with the same bezels on the front. And here's Samsung with a bigger battery and more internals and all this craziness and wireless charging and glass front and glass back and virtually no bezels and a bigger screen.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest and most notable engineering achievements of the Note 7 is the fact that they maintain the feeling of an all-metal phone, similar to the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus, where there's no real ending to anything. The curved screen meets the glass of the screen meets the metal back, and it's just a seamless route all the way around. This is done using glass front and back with barely any metal bezel. And it's it's an incredible achievement, and something that only Samsung, with its ability to stretch and manipulate glass, can do.
And it's billions of dollars.
It's amazing. Yeah, and nobody else can do this. I mean, right. I don't know what the new iPhones are going to look like, but Samsung is clearly at the top of the heap in the industry right now when it comes to control over materials used in its phones.
What do you guys think? I mean, we have the one break in that premium experience is you turn it around and it's still a fingerprint magnet. Now, I can live with that because most of the time, especially with the phones with the edge screens, I have them with the screen facing out of my pocket and it doesn't really matter. I'm not looking at the back, I'm looking at the front. But at the same time, it is kind of a fingerprint magnet still, and that's something you have to deal with.
Part of it is the color, really. I mean, the glass, yes, it gets super fingerprinty, but the thing is that it really only looks bad on the silver and gold models immediately, because you touch it once and it's game over if you have the silver or gold one. The black one, just like, even more so than the blue Note 5 and previous Samsung glass phones, the black one's going to be able to hide a lot of that. But I don't know. It's a tough trade-off, just because I love how the phone feels overall. Mm-hmm. But it's just my OCD tendencies just, make me shake a little bit.
How do you make what's basically a glass unibody phone without getting fingerprints on the back?
You put an oleophobic coating on the back. That's what Sony does. The trade-off there is it makes it slippery as hell.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It makes it fall out of your hands.
That would be a minus to me, and I'm sure I'm not alone.
Yeah, it would to me as well. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know what they do. Let's just deal with it. Wipe it off.
It's an aesthetic decision, and I don't think it's wrong. I mean, I'm using a black GS7 right now, and unless you're in direct sunlight and you're kind of squinting at it and your fingers are filthy, you can't really see the fingerprints very easily.
You just described my life.
As Alex or Andrew pointed out in his "Which Color Should You Buy?" article, it's really only the silver one that's going to be the biggest fingerprint draw. But that one, if you buy a TPU case, a thin sort of, $5-$10 decent quality TPU case to put over it, then you're not really going to see any fingerprints, and it's not going to mar the finish at all. It's going to look like your silver phone. It's, I think, a good compromise.
Yeah,
so I think colors, if you're can get one of those at shopandroid.com.
colors. So we have, we would have mentioned the silver, gold, and black. The black, I think, looks really nice. The metal is absolutely pitch black, murdered out Darth Vader black on this thing now.
The interesting part about it was that it's basically the exact same look as that Batman version of the Galaxy S7 Edge. They just didn't put the gold accents on it or the Batman logo on the back.
So you have I guess silver on the silver, gold on the gold, and we also have the what's it called, coral blue, which
blue
is
coral.
The kind of
blue
rose,
coral,
blue coral, blue coral. Excuse me, which is kind of like a sky blue front and back, and the trim is this kind of copperish rose gold. I'm not sure how you describe that. It isn't exactly pink, is it? It really varies.
I mean, in bright light, it's almost like a light champagne kind of gold color. But in darker situations, it gets a lot more pink and deep coral kind of color. Maybe like a light salmon color.
So from renders, I was kind of expecting these things to look horrible. But you see it in real life; it actually looks pretty nice.
It's a lot more subtle, and the blue is very similar to the blue topaz color of the Galaxy S6 that I think was only available in some regions. I don't think it was available in the US or in North America, but that's what it's very much like that. It's definitely the most flashy of all the colors, and it's the one that Samsung's using in all their marketing materials and videos and everything, because you're not going to find another phone that's the combination of blue and pink or coral or whatever they want to call it. And the cool thing is that this is one of the main colors. So this isn't just like an Asia only release or something. Like, this is going to be in every store in major markets.
Because you would think, looking at this for sure, that some crazy carrier would snap this up and be like, get your blue and pink Note 7 only on right. AT&T or something.
I'm still waiting for the full pink-on-pink Hello Kitty version to come out.
Oh, you know, they've done that with every single Note so far. You know that's coming.
This would be a perfect one for a red one on Verizon, and I'm very surprised we haven't heard or seen that yet. I mean, just a dark red Verizon red under that glass, that would look really good. And if I can think of it, people at Verizon are a whole lot smarter than me.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, because Samsung's the latest takes on colors have really been more earthy kind of colors, where you had the gold, blue, green, the really deep blue. I mean, of course, that deep green was beautiful as well.
Yeah.
And the mirror finish silver, platinum, whatever they want to call it, is really the one that the only one that stands out from these other earthy colors. I agree that red would look awesome, but I don't know how where Samsung stands on doing those special colors nowadays.
Well, do you remember the exclusive to Best Buy topaz blue or whatever it was, electric blue Galaxy S5?
Yeah, that looked good. It's a shame.
That was fine. I mean, that's actually fairly close to this color. But you know, I was looking at the photos that you took of the blue coral version, and it is not flashy whatsoever. It is by far the most subtle, flashy color Samsung's ever made. And I think that really speaks to the approach to the Note 7 in general. Like, everything here is mature, and there's nothing gimmicky, well, very little gimmicky. And overall, I just think they came into this with a lot of confidence, instead of just like throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Well, but I mean, go ahead, Jerry.
That's weird, Dan, because cultures are different. And in a lot of cultures, the negative overtones aren't attached to flashy like they are here in North America. And I'm speaking of Asia. You would think that they would want something that's slightly over the top, because in parts of the world that will be popular, and nobody will think bad of you because you're carrying a glowing pink phone.
But
you kind of have that to a certain extent with the gold one. The gold one is still pretty bright gold. It's more overtly gold and flashy than the iPhone, gold iPhone is.
See, I haven't seen it in person.
Is the gold one going to be in Europe, or is, because the gold one's not in the US?
I can't remember. I don't believe it is one of the standard colors in Europe, so maybe that's Asia only for now. I know they went, as you know, a lot of manufacturers have gone gold first in like countries like China and Japan, so maybe that's part of the strategy there. But, you know, colors will evolve as time goes on, and, you know, it's a small part of the phone overall, but it's, I guess, important at launch as to how these things look.
When I looked at the pictures, the first thing I thought was, if I bought a black one, I would chemical etch something on the back. It would look so good. So if somebody out there does something like that, be sure to send me a picture. Not of your genitals, but of the phone.
Oh, you gotta go there, Jerry.
Send me a picture when the back glass cracks into a million pieces.
I went there because I know some of our listeners, and I might be talking about you and you and you, so just don't do that to me again.
So you and you and you, Jerry, AndroidCentral.com.
Yeah, so. You know it's gonna happen now.
I'm gonna get you back for making a mess at the intro.
Well, that's all right.
So, what else? We got USB Type-C, which I guess is a first for Samsung, but look, it's the same port we've had in other phones. It doesn't really do much. It's the same adaptive fast charging that Samsung's using, just over
just
a different port.
Quick Charge 2.0.
Right, yep. So cue the screaming and about standards and whatnot. When I get one in my hands, I'm going to break all that stuff down. I'm going to write 25,000 words about USB-C ports, and then I'm never going to care about it again.
And here's the big thing is, I saw somebody was asking in one of the many comment threads we have going on all these posts about, you know, where should I find the best charger for this? Because I pre-ordered one and I want to buy a charger ahead of time. And I was just like, well, literally any Quick Charge 2.0 or 3.0 charger, because Samsung hasn't changed anything. They're still shipping the exact same charger in the box as they do with the GS7, which is a Quick Charge 2.0 charger they want to call it adaptive fast charging or whatever their brand is. But so buy a Quick Charge 2.0 or 3.0 charger. They will give you the proper speed. And because Samsung isn't using Type-C to Type-C cable, they're still going to use an A to C cable. So you can plug it into any charger that has a USB-A port on it. So you don't have to worry about anything, doing anything special there.
Yeah, and it's easy to overthink. Easy to overthink this, but it's just the same thing with a different connector on the end.
So having said that, Android Central and Mobile Nations recommends you only use approved chargers from the manufacturer or their third-party list.
Well,
for a list of approved manufacturers, Jerry. Right, just
if you're going to be like that, then you can say it's really cheap to buy a replacement Samsung fast charger because they've been including these in the box and selling them third party a couple years now. They're cheap.
Don't think we're telling you to go to Alibaba and order that 99-cent quick charger. We're not.
No, you should never do that no matter what phone.
Exactly. And this will be moot once it moves over to USB-C to USB-C. It's just for now while we're transitioning from USB-A to USB-C.
It's going to be a long and annoying and painful transition. But Samsung, I think, is probably the least painful of all the manufacturers doing this.
So. My only issue is, okay, let's say Apple puts USB-C, and that's never going to happen on the iPhone. But if they do, that opens up a huge world of USB-C accessories, and most of them aren't going to work on your Note 7 because it doesn't use the standards.
Well, we'll be able to cross that road when we get to it. But
on like Note 13 by then anyway. So
I mean it's not a big deal because it's not going to happen anytime soon. But
these
still,
are cheap purchases to make.
Yeah, that's my only issue.
So speaking of charging, we still have wireless charging. Another benefit of having a glass back over a metal back. Still supports PMA and Qi. Still can recharge from 0 to full in about 90 minutes.
Samsung fast chargers.
Yeah, with the charger.
So I heard it could charge even faster than the Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge. You know why that is, Andrew?
Because the battery is microscopic on the Note 7.
It is ever so slightly smaller than the Galaxy S7
2% Edge smaller. Come at me, bro.
The battery in your Galaxy S7 has been sitting in there since May, and it's smaller. Chemically, it's degraded enough that it's actually smaller by now.
So it's easy to look at this on paper and see a numeric difference in 3,500 to 3,600. And of course, there were rumors that it was going to be 4,000, and people are looking for reasons to be disappointed in anything because it's the Note and it has to be perfect. But I just don't care.
I think it's annoying that people look at the fact that it's 100 milliamp hours smaller than the GS7 Edge instead of looking at it as it's 500 larger than the Note 5.
Exactly. And that's the metric that most normal people, normal people that actually care about how the battery capacity, most normal people looking at specs and comparing from one generation to the other aren't comparing the S7 Edge that they bought 4 months ago. They're comparing maybe the Note that they bought last year, the Note they bought 2 years ago. So yeah, I think it's kind of a non-issue there.
The flip side of that is, to the enthusiasts, no matter how much of a minority we may be in, your top-of-the-line model is positioned against another model that actually has a bigger battery. I can see why people are complaining, but I don't see why you would be so bent out of shape that you wouldn't buy over 100
I think that they should have made it a 3,601 milliamp hour battery.
Exactly. And that, there are people who would have said how much better it was.
If they would have made it like 3625 or something.
3599 with a big troll face on the back of the phone.
But here's the other thing, too. I mean, as Andrew said at the beginning, they're positioning the Note 7 not as a successor to the S7 series, but as a complement.
No, absolutely.
So you're either getting a bigger battery, or you're getting an S Pen,
that's why it's smaller, because you got to have the S Pen takes up space inside that chassis, and otherwise that would be battery.
So let's talk about the S Pen.
It would be 100 milliamp hours bigger.
So the S Pen gives you a 200 milliamp hour theoretic.
You should just build a battery inside the S Pen, right? And when the pen's in, Samsung, you can have that free, no charge.
Well, so this is basically the same kind of S Pen experience as the Note 5. They talked about how they made the S Pen tip smaller so you could have some finer, you know, draw a finer point or write a finer point.
More levels of sensitivity, right?
Twice as many, 4,096 levels of sensitivity, which is kind of the new high-end standard for mobile devices, which I don't know how well you can tell the difference between 2048 and 4096 levels of pressure sensitivity. But I think the more important, you know, you still have the Air Command where you can press the button and it launches these things. You still have the screen off writing where you pop it out and you just start writing on the off screen. But now that's integrated into the always on display. So you have something there. But as soon as you pull it out, you can write, save notes, recall notes, things like that. I think that the most important part of the S Pen experience now is that they've stopped this crazy, horrible approach of having like five different apps that all do different things with the S Pen. And now they've made it into one app called Samsung Notes, where they have like the drawing portion and the note-taking portion and the screen writing functionality and all that kind of stuff is all built into one app. So you can just put one icon on your home screen, you can launch that, and that's all of the like S Pen ready-made stuff. Am I going to use the S Pen? No, probably not.
You're not even going to use the S Pen?
You should move to Europe.
Yeah, not even to make GIFs or translate text or whatever?
Sure. I mean, okay, so you could talk about the GIF thing in a second. You brought up the other two big things that they did, which there's a magnifier, so you can put the pen down on the screen and you can magnify text and things. I guess that's useful. You can also translate text on the fly.
You know how else you can do that? You can move the phone closer to your face.
Yeah. And it will see your eyes or better.
Pinch and zoom as well. But so those are the main things. Plus, like Alex said, you can take any video that's not DRM'd on the screen and you can easily make a GIF out of it.
Well, the thing is, it isn't just videos, is it? It's basically it captures whatever's on the screen, whatever's in the frame buffer, and it just turns it into a GIF if it's not DRM. So conceivably, there's a whole bunch of different possibilities there. You could turn, if you're doing like a guide to an app or something, you could record part of an app, turn it into a GIF. You could turn gameplay footage into a GIF, you know, like video of a Pokemon dancing around outside or something. It is literally just recording what's on the screen, turning it into a GIF, and then you can edit it later. So it's there are a lot of neat possibilities there, and it was kind of cool to see them do that.
I think
GIFs are to make on a PC, it's nice to just have an easy way to grab a thing and turn it into a GIF.
And I think it's a perfect example. So this GIF making thing is just part of the screen select, is that what it's called?
Smart select,
yes, where you can specific images or clip out a piece of an article or something in smart select. So this is a perfect example of something that could be done with just your regular touch, but the fact that it's built into smart select with the S Pen means that they can have all the UI elements be super small, because it's not expected to be, you know, your thumb or your index finger hitting it. It's this little tiny tip of this S Pen. So you can have a little tiny lasso line where you're going around the image. You can have a tiny play button or a tiny capture button or something. And it can all be manipulated with the S Pen and your hand's not in the way of the UI. I think that that's your selling point for the S Pen there, is it lets you do things simply because Samsung could put more stuff on the screen because all the interface elements are smaller and it's not finger touch optimized.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I used a Galaxy Note full time because I wasn't allowed to use a Galaxy Note full time last year. We'll get to that in a minute. But when I did, I found myself doing that exact same thing with it, whether it was selecting tiny, tiny things on a full desktop web page or using things like multi-window because it was easier to make the window bigger and smaller and resize stuff. It is a convenience thing, and as much as it's a note-taking thing, and that's kind of how it started, it's actually as a way to precisely control things with something that isn't a stubby finger. It actually works really well, and like you were saying, it opens it up to a bunch of different kind of UI things that you can do with that.
And so I think we've really buried the lead though here, because the S Pen it can only go in the phone one way. What a crazy idea!
Whoa, yeah. So unlike the Note 5, there was a lot of fuss about that last year. People realized you could actually break the S Pen, and the mechanism that would detect the S Pen by jamming the thing in the wrong way. Can't do that. I mean, they did actually change the design of the body, I think, a few months in to make it so you couldn't do that. But now, yeah, out of the box, you can only put it in like a small distance before it rejects it. So, yeah.
Yep.
Does it
Don't need to worry about that.
Does it do it like the Note 3 and 4 and tell you that it's wrong on the screen, too?
No, it literally does not go in.
Hmm.
Okay. Like, it's designed in a way that, because it has that little clicky point on the end now, they just made the clicky point extra wide, basically, and the silo for it narrower, so that point can never go in past the point where it's, you know, just holds in the end of the phone. Yeah. And as somebody that has a Note 5 with the S Pen detector that's broken because I was told to put the pen in backwards, I'm glad that this isn't going to happen anymore.
Cool.
Also, that was one of the dumbest gates of 2015. Can we all agree?
Yes.
Yes. I think maybe not, you know, throw the gate suffix on it or anything, but it was worth talking about. It's Samsung meant no harm. It was an honest mistake that nobody in their engineering department either checked on, or if they did, they said, nobody will stick the pen in backwards. That shouldn't have shipped that way, because it broke something if you did it. If you stuck the pen in there and it just, you know, pop up the troll face and say, haha, you're an idiot on the screen, that's fine, you know, do whatever. But it broke it. If you stuck it in there, or your kid stuck it in there, or anybody stuck it in there backwards, it broke a functional piece of your phone, and that's just wrong.
Sure. But, so, I mean, how much of that could have been prevented by us, the media, propagating this and making it into a thing?
It definitely wasn't a small, potential little issue that would have been handled with, like, 50 returns worldwide where somebody accidentally stuck it in backwards, but the echo chamber latched onto it, and all of a sudden it was like a national emergency.
We can blame Phil. He's not here anymore. That was Phil that caused all that. Phil,
AndroidCentral.com is responsible for your broken S.
That's why he's not here anymore. Samsung made us do something else with it. But so before we walk away from the S Pen, I want to say, Andrew, the double the resolution for this pressure sensitivity is a big deal if you like for artists.
I used it, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so much smoother than the Note 5. Like, the latency has been reduced. The pressure sensitivity is clearly better. Like, it's not just a little bit. It's very, very noticeable.
And I can see an even bigger difference from the Note 4 that I used a while back and just looking at this thing in videos and using it very briefly this week.
Yeah.
It is almost like, before, you could kind of see a noticeable delay when you were using it, and you knew it would catch up eventually, but it just felt less like using a responsive piece of equipment. And now it is almost, especially when you're writing on the screen in light, when that happens instantly, that's a really cool look.
Wait, so the only, for me, the end point on the S Pen is that it feels like it's such an aspirational thing. Like, I'm gonna buy this, and I'm going to be so productive because look at me, I'm going to have this pen. I'm going to be like signing documents, and I'm going to be drawing while I'm sitting on the bus for 15 minutes in the morning. And then you never take it out.
Is
that really the reality?
No, well, it is, but you also, like we were talking about, makes it easier to do all the stuff with the UI, makes it easier to crop things, to cut things out, and just do everyday things that aren't super creative or super productive, that just make the experience of using the phone and interacting with something and using touch that much easier, because it's just a different kind of touch.
I could have included all of those things in my assessment, that these are things that really seem like they'd be awesome to do, but I just don't know how many people have or will put the S Pen into their daily use.
It's not something, I mean, I've used a lot of notes. It's not something that you necessarily even use every day, but it's something that can be a help when you do use it and you appreciate it when it's there. I mean, look, we wouldn't have got to the point of being on the Note 7 or, you know, the sixth note or whatever you want to call it, if you want to include the tablets. We wouldn't be on the Note 7 if there wasn't something to this.
Right, we can't.
People buy these phones, and they brought it back in Europe after getting rid of it for a year because there was such demand. They tried getting rid of the pen last year, and it was a failure.
Sure.
People want it.
They brought it back to Europe because there's no S7 Edge Plus version.
There isn't, but I mean, that's as much to do with the S7, the regular S7 Edge being as big as it is to do with the Note 7. I mean, it was from the second that they went 5.1 and 5.5 for the S7. This was always going to happen. And
S7 Edge Plus would need a trailer hitch.
Well, that would be one way to do it. You'd have, you know, like a 6-inch version or something, but obviously they decided that wasn't a great idea. So yeah, we have the best of both. We have an edge screen, which has a tighter curve, is less edgy than last year's, and yeah, we have the return of the Note, which is good. So they pretty much threw their hands up at the London event and said, look, yeah, we appreciate all the passion of our fans. We let them down last year by not bringing the Note to Europe, and yeah, just moved on with it from there. So
please stop flooding the streets with wine.
So that's a bit insane. I don't know. Do you guys have any? You guys have any closing overall thoughts on the Note 7? I mean, are you excited to spend time with one? Do you think it's too expensive? Do you think it's too big, or, you know, not?
It's definitely not too big. I'm almost surprised it isn't like 5.8, as they could have, with this new design, they could have gone to 5.8. It would have been basically the same size as it was last year. But obviously they decided 5.7 is the sweet spot, and they can just go with making the phone smaller to and more manageable to deal with that. The cost is definitely a thing, I think, especially in Europe, where we don't really have any reliable prices yet. The prices are kind of between £675 and £750 in pounds, which the ceiling there is $1,000, which is pretty insane. And this is an argument to be said that basically no phone is worth that much money, because phones at half that price point are actually getting really good these days. So, but again, you're at the case of this is a piece of luxury consumer electronics. It is arguably one of the best smartphones you can buy, if not the best smartphone you can buy. You expect to pay a premium for it.
Yeah, Alex, I mean, we always know that Europe and the UK pay a premium for the best Samsung products. That's just been a fact for the last few years.
Yeah, we also get to actually buy unlocked this time, which you guys don't. Yeah.
Right, well, I was going to say, if you're in the US, don't buy one. Wait for the unlocked version.
Be an unlocked version.
Well, then don't buy one at all. Vote with your wallet, people.
I mean, we have another situation where, coming off this high of Samsung releasing the U.S. unlocked Galaxy S7 and S7 Edge, which was, you know, 5 minutes.
Which,
five
by the way,
after,
just saying, still hasn't been updated from.
Right. So after going on that high a little bit, we go back and we see the Note 7 launch where. Yeah, it's just the carriers again. It's $850.
So in Canada, it's $1,050, which is a lot of money. And we don't have financing plans the way that they do in the U.S., so you have to pay $550 up front to get this phone, as opposed to in the U.S. where you can get it for $50 a month or $45 a month on a plan.
And then when you buy it and put a SIM in it, it locks it to that carrier and downloads a bunch of bloatware, and you're stuck with that carrier. You have the worst of every conceivable world with this. You have the high price, you have buying it unlocked and not actually getting an unlocked phone, and you also have bloatware and slow updates.
There needs to be wine flowing in the streets in Canada, because that's ridiculous.
Our national, or I guess our provincial alcohol distribution company just started... that just opened an e-commerce store, so I can now order the wine that will make me drunk every night thinking about this high price.
Is it
but
unlocked wine?
It's all wine is unlocked. It's AOSP wine.
You've unlocked all your wine achievements, have you?
Oh God, that's a.
So, anything else we've missed on Note 7? It's coming, 19th in the US? We've got to wait a little longer in Europe. It's the pre-orders go up on the 16th for us. We get it on the 2nd of September, so, you know.
Yeah, and August 19th in Canada, too. If the four people listening.
If the wine flowing through the streets hasn't. washed everyone away by then.
I just want to say I kind of wish, and I know why they couldn't, because iPhone. I wish they had waited till October and put Android 7 on it, because updating from 6 to 7 is not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy at all.
Update to 7.1 by then, Jerry. Well, that for a segue. Right.
But yeah. But it's good. I think it's going to be much easier to build a phone with 7X on it than it is going to be to upgrade from 6 to 7. And that just has me concerned for a lot of really good phones that may take longer than we think.
Yeah, and it's shipping on Marshmallow, as we're probably most, I would say, 3 weeks away from the final build of Nougat landing. Look, it's a market decision for Samsung, right? They decided it was it was a better decision for them to get the phone out and get it out on M and get it out on M with all the new stuff on top of it, as opposed to waiting a month or more to get.
Yeah, I agree. They had to release it. I know why they had to get it out now, and I don't question that decision.
That the phone is actually on. I mean, it's on sale. It went up for pre-order the day after the event. And it's going to be on sale in every store, and all these pre-orders are going to be shipped 2 weeks later. I mean, that's a really good release pattern as we look at how Lenovo just launched the Moto Z, and then it was delayed even to come out on the one carrier in the whole world, and it still is not available elsewhere.
Yeah, and the rest of the world, you got three months of tumbleweed while we wait for that unlocked version.
Hmm. Right. Good luck with that. As we talk about the Android 7.0 launch, where are you guys standing at on this? We know it's coming soon.
Wait for the real 7.0, people.
Oh, controversial. The real 7 something. So let's actually explain what we're talking about.
Hey, Daniel here. Sorry, Alex, to interrupt you, but I just want to talk about and thank one of our amazing sponsors, Harry's. Harry's, if you don't know, is a razor company looking to make razors better for less. They are $2 per blade compared to about $4 that you'd spend at the drugstore, and they are just plain better. Not only have Harry's razors improved over the last couple of years, but the company actually owns its own razor factory in Germany to make sure that quality stays high. These are razors that have a soft flex hinge for a more comfortable glide. The blades themselves are really thin but strong so that they reach harder to reach places. They have a lubricating strip so your face doesn't get super angry when you're finished shaving. And the handle, which you can choose when you buy the kit, is textured so it won't slip out of your hands when wet. I've been using these blades for a few weeks now, and I have to say, I really like it. My face feels smoother, softer, and way less irritated than the blades that I was using before. And I really think that it's due to the higher quality blades from Harry's. So how can you get these amazing blades for less? Well, there's a special deal going on right now for Android Central podcast listeners. You can go to harrys.com and use the offer code AC for a starter set. This is an amazing deal. You get a weighted razor handle of your choice, moisturizing shave cream, 3 precision-engineered 5-blade cartridges, and a travel cover, all for just $15. Also, for a limited time, and I'm not kidding, there is a special offer for fans of the show where you can get it for even less, but you must go to harrys.com and use the offer code AC for $5 off your first purchase. That's promo code AC at harrys.com when you check out to claim your offer. That's it. Back to you, Alex.
So after a new release every month of Android 7.0 of Nougat, it's looking like we're going to get the final stable release for Nexus devices sometime in August. Evan Blass, CB Leaks, are saying it's coming this month. It's not going to be on the Nexus 5, which is maybe no surprise. Nexus 5 is out of official support status now for new OS versions. So that's going to be happening this month on current Nexuses. You also have the V20 from LG, which is going to be officially the first phone launching with Android 7.0 out of the box, which is a big deal. Normally you expect that to be a Nexus, and we'll get into maybe why that won't be a Nexus this time, and you'll have to wait a little bit. But yeah, that'll be the first phone you buy at the box with Nougat. Of course, all the Nexus will get upgraded to it. Existing phones running 6.0 will start trickling out updates, probably more slowly than we would like, as usual. But yeah, the other thing people were losing their minds over this week was the fact that this LG phone, that what will presumably be a skinned non-Nexus LG phone, the V20, the successor to the V10, is going to be the first phone running 7.0. And the timetable we have for that is September, which means that basically guarantees that, let's assume they get out relatively quickly, that it's on store shelves by mid-September. That means that basically you're looking late September before you have a Nexus, and that's a long time to go from a major new version of Android launching to the Nexus arriving. It's something we haven't ever had for as long as Nexus has existed.
And LG just came out randomly and was like, yep, the V20 is going to be the first phone that's going to have Nougat, and then last night they just put out a press release saying that they're going to launch it on September 6th. So
yeah,
that's just the LG thing to do nowadays, where they kind of just start to trickle out information. But this really came out of left field, because it's like, okay, so LG knows when the next Nexus is coming out then, and then it has started to trickle out this information that doesn't actually have to do with itself.
It's a certain degree of that. I mean, Jerry, do you want to go first or shall I? I think we both have thoughts on this.
I think of this 7.0 that we're going to see, and we're going to see it in August, I'm pretty sure. It's more like a 6.2. It's not everything we saw at Google I/O, and we're getting excited because they slapped a new tag on it, and they had to because of the API level. But I don't think it's going to be able to do background seamless updating. I don't think it's going to be ready for instant apps. I don't think it's going to be ready for Daydream. I'm 99% sure that it's not going to have any machine learning or Allo Duo stuff baked in. It's going to be platform API bumps so it can run apps targeted at Android Nougat, and that's about it. The Nexus comes out, we'll see whatever Google has for a finalized feature set for 7, plus whatever features they aren't including in Android and are either standalone that anybody can download, or Nexus specific. They have hinted that they want to do that, make Nexus specific features. So I'm not sure what to expect. I know it's just going to be a mess.
It's going to be a bit of a mess. So what I think we're going to, I kind of mostly agree with Jerry. I think what we're going to get now is going to be more or less what we've been working towards for the past 5 months with all the features that have been talked about. Daydream is kind of a weird one because LG has not talked about Daydream at all. So who knows what that's all about. But we have, the Daydream development stuff is now in the end preview on the Nexus 6P. So who knows what's going on there. Obviously, what we're looking at now in the preview and the final preview is basically where the final 7.0 release is going to be at. But we also have a lot of rumblings about maybe a future API level that I think Android Police dug up some references to API 25 in the Play Store in the IPK. There's no reason for that to be there if we weren't going to get a pretty quick turnaround from API 24, which is 7.0 Nougat, to maybe API 25, which would be a 7.0.1 or a 7.1. So I think it's pretty obvious to me. And look, by the way, all the leaks of the HTC Nexuses that we've seen have been running N Milestone Release 1 or Maintenance Release 1. That's been the version that's been on it. So to me, it's pretty obvious that it's going to be like an Android 4.1 to 4.2 kind of jump, where in 4.1 you had Project Butter and all the notification stuff and all the core things that needed to be there for people to start making phones. You have that now in 7.0, where you have the new notification stuff, you have the improved DOS, all this other stuff that is at the core of the OS. And then Google's going to build on that with stuff that maybe is hardware-centric. The one thing they got rid of was support for pressure-sensitive screens. They said that would be in a future update. So makes sense. That would be in API 25. Guess what? That's probably what's going to be shipping on the Nexus. So maybe that's something that we find on the hardware level there. So we would have a new API level. Maybe we'd have a new Android version number. Probably we would. And then, of course, the other big thing is Google obviously wants to be a lot more opinionated about the way Nexuses look. And I think what we get on the new Nexus, when you power that on for the first time, you go through the Google experience on there, that is really not going to look a whole lot like Android N does right now on a 6P or on a current testing device. Agree, Jerry?
So, yeah.
Do you think that... So, obviously, I mean, from what we know right now, which is just that the V20 is coming out as the first 7.0 phone, is... So, the goal here is to get more manufacturers going out the, you know, out at the gate having 7.0, you know, instead of taking forever to release a phone with it.
Yeah.
But
so,
do you think that the extra downside of the fact that these phones are going to launch with 7.0 and then, you know, take months and months to get the 7.1 that comes out on comes out right after, is that a worthwhile trade-off?
Maybe. I mean, that's a possibility, but I mean, Google obviously packaged this into two separate pieces. I think that the core stuff, the really important low level stuff, is in 7.0, and that's what they think phone makers need this year to get on their way.
Right.
And then they have the rest of it, the gravy and all the new features, maybe that is centered more around helping them build a new Nexus that is going to be in 7.1 or 7.0.1 later in the year.
And that's what we've been asking for. We've been asking for Google to compartmentalize all this stuff and break it all apart. And that's what they did, and we can't complain. It's just, it's for us, it's going to be difficult. For you guys, if you buy the V20, it's going to be way more secure than the V10 was on Marshmallow. It's going to be able to run most any app that's targeted for Android Nougat. That's all you need to know, and you're better off having it.
I mean, so they would rather get as many phones as possible up to 7.0, even if that means that it's not the very latest, just because sure. That means that's fewer phones on older versions.
Well, there's some seriously important, you know, behind the scenes updates on 7, right, that will that may not necessarily be front and center when the V20 comes out, and it's still going to improve everybody's life. I mean, I'm talking about notifications and multi-window. And those two alone are big enough, you know, reasons to jump onto the 7.0 train. You know, we don't know how much Doze on the Go will affect battery life positively once developers get on board, but it's probably going to be a big deal. And, you know, there's a lot of other stuff here, too. And we're not even talking about Vulkan. Like, you were saying that Vulkan may come to 7.1 or whatever it's called, 7.0.1.
No, Vulkan is already in 7.0.
Right. I mean, it's going to be like, we don't know exactly what's going to be implemented though by the manufacturers on the front end.
Right. We don't know what APIs are going to be exposed or anything just yet. So just because it's there doesn't mean all of it's working.
So I mean, bottom line here, we have the core stuff that's going to be out in 7.0. We'll get that in August. We're almost certainly not going to get a new Nexus for a little while. When we get that, we're going to have like the second part of this 1-2 punch from Google this year. So we have the core stuff in 7.0. We have updates trickling out for phones. That's all well and good. Then we have this second, smaller but more important punch in the form of a new Nexus, probably a minor bump, like a 7.0.1 or a 7.1 release. You maybe have new APIs for like pressure-sensitive screens. Maybe the new Nexus has that. You also have a bunch of really important Google stuff they announced at I/O this year, which is maybe why they also don't want to do a Nexus now, because hey, look, maybe Allo and Duo aren't done, maybe Assistant isn't done, maybe there's a bunch of Google stuff outside the core OS that just needs extra time, and that's when they're targeting it for. And it makes sense, because they don't want to make everyone making a phone that wait on the Google stuff that is only really relevant for a Nexus before they can get their updates out, before they can start shipping new devices.
They've done this before.
They
did it in 2002. Well, in 2009, they released the Droid in like what, October, September, the original Motorola Droid, and then at Christmas the Nexus One with a newer version, having it available for download for manufacturers to build, and then helping Motorola actually put it on a phone to make sure it runs well, was good for the ecosystem. Even though they knew they were going to be making some substantial changes in just a few months.
Yeah, and I think this time around, those substantial changes are going to be ones that are less visible when you're running a skinned version of Android. So your V20 probably isn't going to change the way it looks much going from 7.0 to 7.1, Whereas you look at a 6P, if the 6P gets all the new visual things that we're expecting, maybe that would change quite a lot going from 7.0 to 7.1. We should say there's been a lot of leakage this week on Android Police. They got what looks like a new Nexus launcher that is very different to what we've seen before. It has it's literally going back to the old dynamic of sliding up. The app drawer is literally a drawer now, like it used to be in Donut or whatever. You can slide it up, all your apps live there. The Google search button has been bar has been replaced, but the tab you can slide over. Things look and behave a little bit differently. So that, I think, is just going to be part of a lot of wide-ranging changes that we see on the Google side. And it makes sense because generally every couple of years this happens where the core of Android changes a little bit, the look changes, and the Google apps move on with that as well. So,
but the important thing is your V20 and any other phone that comes with 7.0, that we know that the version number for it. Things like a developer can build an app, and now he can choose which certificates to accept as valid on the security side. Or, like Dan said, your notifications are going to be better. All the stuff, even if you don't see it, that's big, that's a major change from 6, is going to be included. Just not the window dressing.
It's going to be an interesting end to the year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's also important to note that if Google is making it significantly easier, and we've said this every year, but maybe this year will be different. If Google is making it easier for OEMs to update devices, then the Note 7 coming out with Marshmallow maybe isn't that big a deal if we do get it by November, December. But
and see that,
what are the chances of that?
I think that folds into the 7.0, 7.x thing. Let's say 7.0 doesn't support Chrome-style updating behind the scenes. That's a good thing, because then the Note 7 can be easily upgraded from 6 to 7. If they do include that, and the Note 7 ships without a blank partition sitting there waiting to be formatted and an entry written for it in the startup, they can't. They'll never be able to upgrade that with instant, background updating. They'll either have to omit that, or if they can't omit it, they'll just never be able to upgrade to 7. So that's why I think the 7.0 that we're going to see with the V20 is either doesn't need all this stuff or just won't have all this stuff.
Yeah.
That was a really high level. Yeah. I hope the 10 of you who understand it help explain it to the rest.
In terms of explaining it to me like I'm 5, and what does it mean to the phone that I'm buying now versus the phone that I might buy post-Nexus?
The phone you're buying now, if I'm correct, will have a fairly easy upgrade path to Android 7, but maybe not 7.1 or whatever we're going to call it, and may need to wait for even another version of 7.2, if that makes any sense.
Don't scare the people, Jerry.
Well, no, you'll have a higher version than the Nexus.
It's his job to scare the people.
If that happens, you'll have a higher version of software than the Nexus phone, so when you get in comments and fight, you can make sure you mention that. But it's Google. I mean, Google knows this. Google knows that even though they're not responsible and they can do nothing about it, every time somebody sees that 30% of the phones are still running Lollipop or whatever, that makes them look bad. They're doing everything they can except, take a yardstick and beat the people who make the phones to get them to upgrade them. The rest falls on the manufacturers and on us. If we really want the ecosystem to get better and more current, we stop buying phones that don't get updates. And we're never going to do that, so it all falls on Google.
So we have quite a few busy weeks coming up. I think we've got, Andrew, you've got the Honor event coming up soon. I have another Honor event coming up soon.
Yep.
We have IFA at the end of the month. Bunch of new phones coming out there. Actually, a kind of interesting leak of some of Huawei's new stuff. They have there's a build of EMUI 5, which is based on Nougat that leaked out this past week. Kind of showing the direction they're going with their design. Interestingly,
Much
less bad. There's still some icon weirdness going on there. Like, they had the old icons, but some of the new UI, so it's kind of like obviously not really fully done yet. But it looked good. Yeah, it's the notifications are supposedly turning into something a lot closer to the way Google's doing, which you would expect in 7.0. You have to basically just copy that implementation because that's the way notifications work now. But it's promising to see Huawei phones finally seem to get things right in terms of software. They've come a long way in the past year, and I think whatever they do at IFA, hopefully with this software, it's be worth paying attention to.
And that's going to be right after Honor product launches in the US and Europe as well, where we see the predecessor to that probably, right?
So not the new
stuff, but 4.1.
The 4.1, which is pretty good. I've been using it on, actually got a on a not on a Huawei P9 Plus SIM, which is the bigger version of the P9, kind of the one that was harder to find and harder to get hold of and not many carriers picked up, but it's actually really nice. Extra gig of RAM, faster performance, bigger battery, really, really cool. And they've gone through stages of software updates and improving things. And it used to be a case on Huawei where they would just mess with your icons. They would put horrible, squirrely backgrounds on them. They're no longer doing that. The bugs have been fixed. The only thing that kind of irritates me now about a Huawei phone is the notifications. And hey, look, that's the thing that's getting fixed next. So. Yeah, they're very slowly getting there, and that's actually kind of the one thing that the big surprise I'm looking forward to at IFA this year.
I want them to release the kernel source. Do that for me.
Oh, they're never going to do that.
Until then,
that's what their press conference is for. Their press conference is for releasing the kernel source.
I can't wait for that one. I hope they're live streaming it.
I'll watch.
You know, I think we also can't forget for people, the millions of people in China and India and other countries east of us, that MIUI 8 is being released this month.
That's still a thing.
It's a big thing for the millions of people using Xiaomi phones. MIUI is currently in beta, but it's being officially released publicly on August 23rd. And it's a big deal. It moves the platform up to Marshmallow, which... it doesn't sound that impressive, but
just in time to be obsolete.
Well, I mean, look, they've always been a full generation behind, but they also don't interface with Google, so it
right,
really
it's their
doesn't
own
matter.
Thing.
But they're like it's Amazon. A big update. It makes the whole thing. And I was talking to our awesome Indian correspondent Harish earlier today about this. He says that this is by far their biggest release. They're really trying hard to, I guess, pull a Huawei, if you will, and not make it as objectionable to Western audiences as it has been. So Who knows? I mean, maybe Xiaomi with MIUI 8 could move a little bit into the U.S. market. I mean, don't count on it, but we'll see.
I've been hearing those rumors for 3 years now, so I'm ready for it to happen, for real.
Some of their phones, Dan, I know you and I would love to get a Mi Note 4 because it has the very best audio hardware you can buy inside it.
It does.
And an amazing amplifier, and we don't get it. So from what I understand, their hardware is just incredible.
Yeah. Well,
so
you know,
if
go ahead. You know who else's hardware is incredible is ZTE. And we talked about this a little bit last week, but I reviewed the ZTE Axon 7 this week, and it's got amazing, amazing sound, both from the front-facing speakers and from the headphone jack. And you and I had a conversation, Jerry, about this earlier.
Yeah.
They did good with audio.
Yes.
It is a fantastic audio experience.
And they're not cheating and processing and using, you know, software to do it. They put the hardware in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's impressive.
Yeah. So it's a great phone, marred a little bit by some dicey software decisions, but what else is new from ZTE?
Is that software ever going to get updated?
That's the thing. I hope ZTE steps it up a bit. From talking to them last year, I think they understand the importance. It's just that's not cheap, and if it took them a year to get a plan in motion and they can do it this year, then good on them. I won't complain anymore.
And I think that the one thing there is that in the US anyway, I don't know how it's been in Canada, but everybody's impression of ZTE, there's a large portion of people who have used ZTE phones who aren't aware that they use ZTE phones, but everybody else's impressions of ZTE are, I bought this really crappy phone from a prepaid carrier or from another carrier that sold it to me for $79, and it's a total pile. And that's, if that's your first impression or only impression of ZTE, it's tough to spend $450 on a ZTE phone.
Well, you owe it to yourself to find one and actually hold a good ZTE phone. I agree with Andrew. They have mired their name by making phones that nobody wants. But somebody has to make those phones, and ZTE makes
even their previous... I totally get that those have to exist and carriers demand them, and ZTE makes a lot of money making those white label phones. I think that further than that is I just have a bad impression of them from their previous mid-range efforts, like before the Axon series. They made some really crappy $300 phones where they tried to do this high-value mid-range thing, and it fell completely flat. I'm glad to see that the Axon 7 is actually, you know, a solid attempt. And I hope that, you know, after a couple more generations of that, people will actually, you know, be interested in trying them out.
Yeah. So all the good things that you guys are talking about with ZTE applies to Huawei as well. And increasingly, I think Huawei is miles ahead of ZTE in their software. And the hardware, I think, from the Huawei phones this past year has been as good as anything that anyone else has ever made. I'd be really interested when we get the team together in New York in a few weeks to see what you guys think of the P9 and the P9 Plus, because these are some really nice phones, still held back a little bit by the software. But if we're in a position in a month's time where the software is probably based on Android 7.0 and looking a hell of a lot better, that's going to be game on for Huawei, and especially if they can start to creep into the US market more with Honor and this other brand. It's going to be a really interesting time for them, I think.
You really want Huawei to happen? How much are they paying you?
I don't want Huawei to happen. I just think it's inevitable. I think it's probably deserved with the quality of the product.
Huawei is happening.
Huawei is happening. It's regardless of whether I want it to or not. And look, I think based on, you can say what you like about the company itself, there's been a lot of reports about them, and a lot of people don't trust them for very various reasons. Yeah, but you can't argue with the quality of the products they're putting out, and I think they're only going to get better.
Right. Yep. I'm just giving you a hard time. I got nothing.
I know you.
I really do wish they would release all their source code. That's a pain, but I got nothing.
Well, you really wish Phil was here so you give him a hard time instead.
Well, I can give him a hard time, just not live on a podcast.
Tell him to release his source code.
Soon. He would. He would just, Phil would just invent something and say, here, just to shut me up.
And don't worry, Phil will be back at some point. Maybe we'll have Phil or 302.
We'll see. We might have Phil back on our podcast if we let him.
Once Samsung lets him out of jail.
is that why we decided he was not on the podcast? Is he in Samsung jail?
He's in a Korean jail somewhere. I'll send you a hacksaw and a cake, Phil.
So anything else we're missing this week that has been happening?
That was the big stuff, and I was looking at the calendar that I think we'll be able to do a proper recorded podcast the next 3 weeks, actually.
Yep. I may or may not be around next Thursday, so we'll see.
Next Thursday might be tight for Alex, but that'll be... we'll find some way to do a nice pre-IFA podcast where we can round up the big stuff that we're going to potentially see that week. And, of course, we'll do one live on the ground at IFA as well.
We might do one live on the ground in New York in a couple of weeks.
That could be our pre-IFA podcast, actually. We could do it a little early, and we'll all huddle around one microphone in a room like you all love.
With a lot of German beer. And Phil will definitely be back for that podcast, by the way.
You know what I get to do?
We're breaking out of jail.
While y'all are looking at Samsung tablets at IFA, I get to go to a bluegrass festival.
Okay.
Can I come, man? Yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
I'd rather do that than go to IFA.
Yeah.
Dan. You're doing neither.
I think IFA is Samsung tablet land, because that's all I can ever remember happening from IFA.
I mean... I'm sure that I would rather be at a bluegrass festival when I'm up riding at like 3 in the morning somewhere in Berlin. But I don't know. They're always fun shows when you get to go over to Europe, and they're massive, massive shows.
Yeah,
and IFA, you see a lot of cool stuff that you're not normally exposed to on top of all the big manufacturers.
Yeah, IFA is just on a whole different scale.
Can one of you do a vlog, a daily vlog while you're in IFA? Because you guys, you know, that's totally...
It's something we've kind of been talking about doing some kind of behind-the-scenes thing for the past few shows. We've never kind of really managed to do it just because, first of all, it's not always glamorous, you know, seeing how the sausage gets made, you know.
It's not glamorous at all, in fact. Not just slightly, but...
So we got to work out how we would do that. And, of course, we would also be working on actual work as well as working on the vlog. So it's necessarily to give us ourselves overhead. It would be cool to do. We'll have to see.
Remember, you can't take a camera into the Kit Kat Club.
At minimum, we always have a lot of awesome stuff that goes up on our own Instagram accounts and Twitter accounts and things like that. You get a little bit of that behind the scenes, and you know, all the beer and sausage pictures you can handle.
Exactly. And Jerry's just give me memories of writing about Android 4.4 updates and talking about manufacturers joining the Kit Kat Club. That was a reference that I think not many people got.
Nope. Well, I think that's...
And we can just leave that there.
Yep. Time to wrap up note. About... and share those Instagram accounts and tell people where you are on the internet.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah. Should we do a traditional podcast outro where we can tell people where to find out things about ourselves? You should, by the way, follow Android Central on all of the things. We are at Android Central on all of the things, except Snapchat, which we are at Mobile Nations.
Newly verified on Twitter as well.
Newly verified on Twitter, yeah. Actually, are you guys verified? I haven't even tried yet.
I got rejected super hard.
I don't care about that stuff. I didn't even try.
I'm
on
limbo.
Twitter, though.
Fine. I guess a lot of travel coming up for all of us. I'm at Alex Dobie on the Twitters and the Instagrams, and I guess I'm still on Google Plus, kind of, but not really doing much on there. So follow me on at least two of those three things.
All right. My name is Daniel Bader. I actually realized I didn't actually say my name at the beginning of the podcast because I really...
I said your name. I said you were Canadian, everything. I said your name and your nationality.
I will have to go back to the tape. This is unproven yet. But my name is Daniel Bader, at Journey Dan on Twitter, Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram, Peach.
And my apologies if you hear all that noise. The Blue Angels just flew over my apartment.
Was
so.
Phil flying?
That's a lie. That's your washing machine, man.
Actually, I think this is the second time that the Blue Angels have been loud in a podcast. Because they like to fly around places. Anyway, sorry, Daniel.
That's okay. I'm done. I listed all the places, all the
follow
all the
Dan at blueangel.com.
Actually, I highly doubt that that is their website.
That should be Dan's website.
And you can follow Jerry at the Kit Kat Club.
Yes, they know me.
Where could people?
Part of the reason why I'm not allowed back in Berlin.
I'm on Twitter. And mostly nowadays, just like Alex, Google Plus has kind of faded. Andrew Martinick on Twitter and things. And at Blue Angels is the Blue Angels Twitter account I just found. So I'll let them know that they have
They're
been
the
making
podcast.
Noise.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
I have a Twitter.
I think that wraps it all up.
Jerry is at GB Hill on Twitter. G-B-H-I-L.
Thank you, because I'm sitting here looking, trying to figure out where I find out what my Twitter thing is. I try to use Twitter. I get busy. And if I don't get back to you on Twitter, it's just because, number one, I'm busy. Number two, it's just when things get backed up, I nuke everything. And I'm sorry. I have an Instagram, too, but I have no idea what the thing is. Because at GB Hill, well, they kicked me out. Instagram banned my original name.
What did you put on what did you put on Instagram, Jerry?
Well, stuff. And they banned my original account. So I think it's at Jerry Hildenbrand 1 is my
Good
Instagram where I won't post things that you probably don't want to see.
Cool. All right. Well, we skipped out on voicemails mainly because none of us know how to do voicemails because Phil's not here. But we'll definitely find out for some future podcast and we'll get back on emails as well. We also want to get some Twitter questions coming in. We'll have some stuff on that probably in the next week or so, and we'll get into being a little bit more interactive as opposed to just talking about various things. But I think that is a good place to wrap it up. We've gone a good hour and a half today on various things. So, Jerry.
Alex.
Daniel. Andrew.
Alex.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
May or may not be joining you guys next week. We'll have to wait
to see.
I
get paid to be here. You don't have to thank me.
But it's fun anyway.
If you weren't.
Indirectly thank you with money. Okay, so we'll see you guys next week, hopefully. Follow us on all the things. I guess that's basically it.
Okay. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Adios.
Get some silence and let Alex do his thing.
Yeah. Hey, everybody,
hey, Alex.
Welcome.
I had to do that to you at least once.
Oh, f*** you, Jerry.
Make that the intro, please.